Steve and I rang the next doorbell at the next house on the street, which we were working that particular day, not far from here. And the door finally opened, and a lady came to the door and somewhat cautiously asked who we were and what we were about, and we were happy to tell her that we're from the church down the street here. We meet at Coyote Trail. And she was relieved to know that we weren't part of a cult. When she found that out, she opened the door and came out and talked to us for a little while. And during the course of the conversation, told us a little bit about her background and her history. She and her husband had gotten married in their late teens, early 20s, and started off, and they didn't know the Lord, and had pretty much some difficult days early on in their marriage. Then they found Jesus, and their lives were transformed. So much so, I mean, it was such a dramatic change in their life. They went from being nightlife kind of people to Bible-toting Christians on Sunday morning. And it was so obvious to the family that something dynamic had changed. Now, not all of the family is yet converted, but they could tell that something had happened, that their lives had been transformed. That conversation that day with Jackie, as she eventually told us what her name was, she didn't tell us right away. Remember Jackie? It's been a few months since we spoke with Jackie. But it set me to thinking about the disciplined life. And it set me to thinking about following Christ and really what it means. And it set me to thinking this way. You see, often we think Christianity is what? It's about saying the sinner's prayer, and it's about having your sins forgiven, and it's about knowing that you're ready to meet God. But friends, that's just the opening of the door. As it was with this couple, they found Jesus, but then something happened. Their lives were transformed. And I want to suggest to you today, and all the other things that we've looked at with this word follow, and we've looked at it, it's a call to a decision, to death, to deny self, to devoted service. It also implies with it disciplined living. I can't live however I want to and claim to be a follower of Christ, which was the very argument Jackie was making that day. In fact, she was shocked. She said, "I thought my church was the only one that's out on the streets trying to introduce people to Jesus Christ." Remember that, Steve? And I assured her, no, that isn't the case. We're in the neighborhood, and we're trying to reach our friends and neighbors for Jesus Christ. But for that to happen, for us to have the impact that Christ wants us to have in this life, then we have to live a disciplined kind of life. A life without discipline is not the life of a disciple. So, is your life of discipleship and following Christ marked by commitment to Jesus Christ that would be defined like that's a disciplined person? That is a committed disciple of Jesus Christ. And if it's not, how can we get there? So that's really what the rest of the message is about. Hey, if I'm supposed to have a disciplined life that really shines for Jesus Christ and makes an impact on my world, how do I even get there? And I want to ask two follow-up questions. And the first one is this: why should I even care about living a disciplined life? Who cares? That's kind of we got to get that out of the way first. And then the second question we'll look at in a little while is, so if I'm supposed to live a disciplined life, what's it look like? What does a disciplined life look like? So we're just going to cover those two questions today and ask ourselves, first of all, why should I even be concerned or even want to live a disciplined life? I've got so many other things screaming, begging, nagging me for my attention. Why should I make this an important part of my life too? So let's consider that. I think initially some people would think to themselves, hey, shouldn't Christianity be easy? Shouldn't Christianity just come naturally? Do I really have to work at this? But I think if we begin to ask the questions, the answers begin to present themselves. Is anything about the Christian life natural? The Christian life is supernatural. It takes the supernatural work of God's Holy Spirit to convert any person. And if I'm going to keep living the Christian life, then I need supernatural help, and I can't just expect that just to kind of just drop down with the dew each morning. I'm going to need some extra help to get there. I'm going to have to work at a disciplined life. I want to start by just reminding you of what the record said about the first 12 disciples whom we've been following on this course of learning what it means to follow. The first example I want to give you here is Mark chapter 10 and verse 28. Peter began to say unto him, "Lo, we have left all and followed thee." Well, there's some discipline involved there. I have to leave in order to follow. Here's a couple more examples. Luke chapter 5, verse number 11. "When they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him." One more reference in Luke chapter 14, verse 33. "So likewise, whosoever be of you that forsakes not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple." Those verses are not new to you. We've touched those in other sermons so far this year. But every one of them we see repeatedly, there's this call, if I'm going to be a disciple, I have to leave something. I have to leave all. We talked about that, especially in the sermon on denying self. But I just want to set the stage again that it requires some discipline on the part of these disciples. Now, who would give up everything, or why should I give up everything to follow Christ? Now, this is a vital question. I want you now to look with me at Matthew chapter 4, where I asked you to turn earlier. Matthew 4 and verse number 18. Why should I leave all to live a disciplined life following Christ? Matthew 4, verse 18. Familiar text, stay with me. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. Verse 19, he saith unto them, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men." All right, you remember this? We've seen this in each of the Gospels has an account of this. Jesus goes by the sea, he calls Peter and Andrew, and then he follows that up with James and John on the same day. They're all fishermen. Now, why would these fishermen drop their nets and follow? If you've been around here for a while, you know that when we interpret the Bible, context is key. And that ought to be an important interpretation thing. Often, people like to go to one verse and grab it out of one chapter and throw it with a verse from another chapter and never really show you how it's all tied together. I think there's an interesting contextual clue in here of why James and John and Peter and Andrew would leave all and live a disciplined life following Christ. So I want you to look back at verse number 17, the verse that comes right before. "From that time Jesus began to preach and to say, 'Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.'" How is that tied into the call of Jesus? It's this. He was preaching to the crowds, "The kingdom of heaven is at hand." And then he called to the disciples and said, "Now it's time for you to follow me." Now, I want to suggest to you that the reason why any of us should live a disciplined life, restraining ourselves from certain privileges and living committed lives for Jesus Christ, is simply because we have become convinced, as the first 12 disciples were, that the kingdom is real. The reality of the kingdom drives or motivates me in the discipline of my life. If I can't see heaven, if I can't see a crowned Christ in heaven seated upon the right hand of God, to which I will one day have the privilege of entering, then all of what we're talking about is nonsense and we need to get up and go out the back door. But once I become convinced that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and it was because Jesus was there and He's the King, and the kingdom is already in operation because wherever Jesus is and over whatever Jesus rules, that is the kingdom. The church today is headed by whom? By Jesus Christ. He's the head of the church. He rules over the church. And so the church today is a symbol of that kingdom. The kingdom, in part, because we're waiting for the entirety when the glory is going to be revealed when we're with Christ. And that's the beauty of that coming day, right? When the bride comes down and is resting over the earth and that new world that God makes, the eternal state, that's all coming. That's the ultimate picture of the kingdom. But now the church is just a picture of it in the world. But because I'm convinced that there is a king, and because I'm convinced that the kingdom is real, in fact, I'm so convinced as a believer that heaven and hell are real and that there is a kingdom and that I'm going to be a part of it, it changes everything about how I view life. I don't view life merely now as about having a career and working about 40 years or maybe a little less if I can find a job that'll let me retire in 20 and then retiring and raising my grandkids until I pass off the scene. Life is bigger than that. And it's bigger than that because there is a kingdom. You take the kingdom out, and there's no reason for living the Christian life that you're living. You take the kingdom out, there's no reason why you should sacrifice to keep setting up a church and to teach my Sunday school class and to deny myself so I can tithe at the church. There's no reason I should do that if there is no kingdom. The kingdom drives everything. If Jesus is the king, and he does have a kingdom to which I'm destined, then I want to live all out for the kingdom. And that change, that drives my discipline in my life. Now I want to show you this. It doesn't just happen in Matthew chapter 4 or in Mark chapter 1. So I'm going to ask you to flip now, or if you don't want to, it's on the screen today as well, Luke 9. We looked at this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about denying ourselves. And I was looking at other things that week, but when I was studying and I came back to this passage, the kingdom kind of sifted up to the surface. You know how that does sometimes? You read a passage, and then suddenly you read it with something's on your mind, and it sings. Look at verse 59. He said unto them, follow me. But he said, Lord, suffer me first to go to bury my father. Remember we talked about that 2 weeks ago. Jesus said unto him, let the dead bury their dead, but go thou and preach what? Preach the kingdom. Preach the kingdom. That is the motivation, that is the only worthwhile motivation for living a disciplined life. Another also said, Lord, I'll follow thee, but let me first go and bid farewell, which are at home in my house. And Jesus said, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for what? Kingdom. There it is again. Kingdom. The reason these people were leaving all to follow Christ is because they were convinced there was a kingdom. Otherwise, there's no reason to live this way. It's the reality of the kingdom that drives the disciplined life. Let me illustrate this to you in one other passage, just so you see it all coming together. I'm going to ask you to turn to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19, verse number 12. It has to do briefly on a brief passage, and Jesus was being asked teaching on eunuchs. Eunuch is a Bible reference to a male who is unable to father children. And Jesus gives various reasons for this in Matthew 19, verse number 12. He says, there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb. That is, because of whatever happened when they were born, they're unable to have children. Some families have struggled with the frustrations of infertility. Sometimes that happens. Number two, there's another reason that there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men, either through accident or on the deliberate purpose of men. Now, this is in history. If a young boy really knew how to sing and he sang well and he had that really nice voice, they would make sure it didn't change when he was 13. You know what I mean? So he was made a eunuch by men. Look at the third. Some actually choose this way of life. Some have made themselves eunuchs for what sake? The kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it. And why did I show you that verse? Well, it is a natural and desirable thing to father children. Nothing wrong with that. Legitimate part of life. But the third group have chosen to deny themselves a privilege for what purpose? The kingdom. The kingdom. The kingdom drives all disciplined living. So why should I deny myself any pleasure? Only if I'm convinced of greater pleasures to come. Psalm 16, verse number 11. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. So why should you discipline yourself to live by the commandments of Jesus Christ? Why should you work hard to learn what Christ taught about how to live a godly life in this world? And why should you work at living a disciplined life following the Good Shepherd? Only because there is a kingdom. The kingdom is real. The kingdom is coming. And Jesus said, I get to be a part of it. He said, didn't he, to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, except ye be born again, ye cannot see the kingdom of heaven. But since I am born again, I'll see that kingdom. Now I want to ask you today, are you living for the right kingdom? It will be determined by where you place the bulk of your resources. It will be determined by the way you spend your time. It will be determined by the decisions that you make. Disciples who are living for the kingdom discipline their lives. I'm going to talk about back seats. I know a little bit about this because that's my almost my whole car is a back seat. I have a minivan full with, used to be full of car seats. Now some are starting to phase out finally out of the car seats. But often before I pull out, I'll say, does everybody have their buckles on? And some of you remember those days of putting your kids in the back and buckling them all in. And I have to be sympathetic to kids riding in the back. I am more so, I think, than I used to be. I mean, it's hard to sit back. Those safety harnesses have got you five different ways. You think the safety belt you have is bad, you know? They just cannot move. And you know how it gets sore, you know, one place and you like to transition? They're locked in so tight they can't move. They're helpless. But there's also another problem with riding in the back seat. You can't see where you're going. You can look out the side view and see the farms and see the cattle or the houses passing. And if you're driving through Marana, you just see fields, empty fields. But anyway, there's not a whole lot to look at. Now, every now and again, I'll tell the kid, you know, I'll let the kids when we get in the car know where we're going, but they can't see us getting there. I'm so thankful that God, as He's driving us through life, and He's really He's at the controls. And I kind of look at myself as seated in the back seat, and He tells me there's a kingdom out there. Now, I can't see it full view yet. Can't see it. But He tells me there's a kingdom, and He's taking me there. And you know what? Because of that, I can sit back in the back seat with my restraints on, some buckles I don't like about holy living, and I can put up with them because the driver keeps telling me there's a kingdom and that's where we're trying to get. Do you get it? I can live a disciplined, harnessed, restrained life if I'm convinced there is a kingdom. If not, none of it makes sense. Question two. This is why you ought to live a disciplined life. There is a kingdom that you're going to. Number two, what does a disciplined life look like? What does Christ expect from me as I follow Him as one of His sheep? All right, let's consider that for a little bit of time. And I'm going to ask you to look again at Matthew chapter 4. I don't know if you turned a page, but we want to get back there. Matthew 4, again in the context in which Jesus is calling to the four fishermen to follow Him. After calling Peter, or Simon Peter, and Andrew, he says to the, says in verse number 20, and they straightway left their nets and followed Him. I'm going to go back to what I talked about earlier and how following Christ and living the disciplined life involves leaving certain things behind, and it suggests to us a life of restraint. I've hinted at this already. A disciplined life is I'm holding myself back from natural pleasures, natural things that go with life, but I'm doing it for the sake of the kingdom. I think all of us struggle with letting go of the world. It's all got a, the world's got a greater hold on all of us than I think we realize. We're all various stages. Some of us master it a little bit better than the other and live full out for Jesus. Let me tell you about C.T. Studd, missionary, pioneer. He's an amazing man because he worked in so many remote places with the gospel. For the first 10 years of his marriage, he and his wife ministered in China. 10 years. Then they left China and went back to England. And then for a while, were about 6 years in India, pastoring a church in India. And then after that, he spent the last about 22 years of his life ministering in the heart of Africa, in the Congo, trying to reach tribal peoples for Christ. His whole career was mission work and trying to get the gospel to people, and in very large and vast fields. His son-in-law and his daughter Pauline were about, they had been visiting and helping him and were about to go back from the Congo back to England. And he kind of had a sensation or an impression that it would be the last time he'd see his daughter Pauline. She'd come into the tent. So he's trying to say his farewells, and he kind of felt like he'd like to give her something, kind of a token. And he's looking around his tent, and he saw a Nestle milk can over with a few pencils that he, you know, used. And he looked another way, and he saw a couple of worn Bibles that he had been using. And then he finally just looked up at her after looking around the tent, not finding a whole lot of value that he might give his daughter as a parting present. And he said this. He shook his head and said, "Pauline, I'd really like to give you something, but I find that I gave everything I had to Jesus years ago." Wow. A life of complete disciplined commitment to Christ. He let it all go to Jesus. So I think he got it. He had very little in this world because he was living for a different world. Now, I'm not asking you, and Jesus is not asking you to go out and sell all that you have, you know, and give to him. He did ask that of the rich young ruler for other reasons. I don't have time to go there. But we should hold loosely the things in the world, that none of it would hold us except our commitment to Jesus Christ. I must move on. What's a disciplined life look like? A life of full restraint, giving up everything in the world for Christ. Number two, it's a life of righteousness. A life of righteousness. I think somehow in our excitement over grace, and I'm excited about grace. You guys like grace? Man, I don't deserve anything. All that I have comes from God. Even the fact that I'm standing here breathing comes from God. The fact that I have my health and my wife and my family, all from God. Ultimately, though, when I'm talking about grace, I'm thinking about the grace shed abroad to all of us in Jesus Christ, who died on the cross and paid for our sins and made a way for me to enter His kingdom. That's incredible. Never get over grace. Somehow, though, I think we have diminished in our trumpeting of grace, we've diminished our responsibility to the law. Grace does not eliminate the law. Remember what Christ said? "Think not that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Grace does not eliminate the law. Grace enables me to keep the law. Because of His grace, I can actually do. Before I couldn't, I was powerless to do what God expected. But because of grace, I can do what God expects me to do. It's incredible. So I think grace is great. But I just want to caution you against casting off the law. And there is a movement in Christianity, it's been going on for a while, the kind of liberty is license. That we're the libertines, and we can do whatever we want in the name of Christ, and you can't tell me not to. That's not, look at Galatians chapter 5, verse number 13, that tells us that that isn't the nature of liberty, of the liberty that Christ has given to us. Christians have become accustomed, I think, because of that and other teachings, to sloppy living. We no longer really passionately pursue lives separated from the world. Many of the sins that enslave the world enslave us. So no wonder the world scoffs at us and doesn't want to have anything to do with Christ. I think we have become... Have we become sloppy in our living?
Yes.
How about this? Are we sloppy in our dress habits? You know, many times it's hard for me when I'm out in public... And not just me, it's other people too, to tell a Christian from another person, because the Christian is just as immodestly dressed as the next person in the Walmart store. What has happened to this? I know people draw the lines of modesty and immodesty in different places. But as the children of God, following the Good Shepherd, shouldn't we err on the side of being modest and eliminate anything that's questionable in our wardrobes? That goes for male and female. I think we're sloppy there. I think we might be sloppy in our viewing habits. You know, I think many of us think because of the story or the movie or this one got 4 stars that we ought to see it, and we put up with more profanity and sensuality than we ought to. And we think we can control it, not realizing that our flesh is like a piranha. You put anything in the fishbowl and it's going to get sucked up. You put any of your flesh in front of a cesspool of sin and you're going to get sucked right into it. I told you about Jackie. I started the message about that because I was just so impressed with her testimony. Goes to another church. Doesn't share a lot of my theological positions, but I believe she's a believer. And she's passionate about following Christ, she and her husband. That's what I love. But that's what I'm trying to cast. A passionate desire to follow Christ completely, totally, fully. She was telling me in the course of her conversation that she and her husband had a television when they got married. It was part of their life. But they realized it was beginning to dominate their life, take too much time, not to mention all this stuff they'd rather it not be on the TV. You know what I'm talking about. So they made a choice early in their marriage, got rid of the TV. She later confided as part of that, she said, people come into my house and they look, even in Arizona, and they look how everything in my house is all dusted and all tidy. And they ask me, how can you do this? How can you keep your house so neat? And she said, well, you know, it's amazing what you can get done when you shut the television off. That's just her story. I'm just repeating her story. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying she realized it was a way for her to gain time and also to gain curb viewing habits that weren't appropriate to the Lord. Hey, is this an area that we're a little sloppy in? Hey, I think it might be. And I think we might make some adjustments there. How about our talking habits? You guys, most of you who are working, you're in break rooms, you sit around and you hear the chatter that goes on, right? Not always good chatter, right? Much of it. Hey, listen, I used to sit in break rooms until I became a pastor, right? I know what goes on in there. And I'm not just talking about the sensual, dirty kinds of talk. How about just the criticism of leadership? That supervisor this, and that boss better not, and boy, I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. Or the comments that are made about other employees, you know, when they're not around. We just call it helpful information. It's really just plain old gossip. And that kind of stuff goes on, right? We need to curb and we need to pull in and we need to rein in and discipline. I'm following Christ and I'm committed to a kingdom. And because I am, I'm not going to be sloppy with my life. We curtail some things. We need to be roped in a little bit. Because it's worthwhile. I'm on my way to a kingdom. It's absolutely holy and pure and I want to be that way too. So Jesus started out with four fishermen. I don't know if four fishermen today that do fishing for a living. I'm not talking about the guys who go and put a line in Silverbell Lake. I'm talking about the guys who... Fishermen are hard men. I don't know what Peter, Andrew, James, and John were like, but I just have to think there was some work to do on the holy living part, on the disciplined life. Don't you think? Just maybe? But he was in the process of taking this rough ore and changing them into committed disciples who would become his official representatives to the world. And when Jesus left 40 days after his resurrection, they were his only witness in the world. And Jesus has called you and I to this same purpose. Finally, what's a disciplined life look like? Hey, it's a life of restraint, holding back from pleasures in the world. It's a life of righteousness, getting away from the sin that's clouding and corrupting my life. And finally, it is a life of reaching the lost. I'm going to go back to what I talked about before. We've touched on this before about the disciples. When Jesus called them along, it wasn't simply just for them to follow and listen to Him preach and do all the miracles. What was ultimately the purpose that Jesus was calling these men to follow? He was going to send them out to preach. And He gave them power over unclean spirits. And He gave them power to teach His Word. He was sending them out. And that's what He intended for the disciples to do as well. He didn't want them to stay in the seat and just watch Him do it. He wanted them to get out of their seats and do something for Him. Preach the gospel. I put up Mark 10. I could have used other verses. Did I put up Mark 10 there? Matthew 10? Yeah, there we go. Matthew 10, 5. These 12, Jesus sent forth, commanded them, saying, go not in the way of the Gentiles, into any city of the Samaritans, enter ye not, but go rather unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. He sent them after lost sheep. Here their ministry focused primarily on Israel. Later they would reach the Gentiles, as God would teach them. But the desire to go after lost sheep is a hallmark of a disciplined life. It takes discipline to give the God. It takes discipline to put tracks in your pocket when you go to work or when you go out. It takes discipline to actually pull the tract from your pocket and give it to the clerk when you check out. It takes discipline to do that. But I'm saying that's what this word follow implies. Follow is not a cakewalk. It's not a Sunday school picnic. It's a call to live a transformed life in front of the whole world because there's a kingdom worth living for. Tax season's upon us. Oh, joy. My favorite time of the year, right? No, the favorite part about tax season is when I get all my paperwork finally together. I'm relieved. Years ago, I started having someone else do my taxes. I think maybe I did my taxes once or twice, maybe. My mom did them, and then after I got out on my own, I found someone to do my taxes. There are a number of reasons I don't want to go into all that, but it's a whole lot easier just to get my numbers together and give them to somebody else to do all the paperwork for me, because I'm always afraid that even if I do it all right, I'm going to miss one of the deductions I could have gotten and end up paying more money anyway. And the guy I had, I just trust the guy to do a good job. I'm sure you got something like that. So it's easy at tax time, here's my point, to give that away to someone else. How about your evangelism? Are you content to give that away and let someone else do it for you too? The discipline life says, I have a responsibility in light of the kingdom to tell people along the way to join me. It's been my goal as your pastor not just to talk about it on Sunday morning, but to give you opportunities through the week. And we have a number of opportunities here. You don't have to evangelize this way. This is just a door. We could call this door number one that you can enter in evangelism, evangelize. Door number one, our growth teams meet twice a month. We need more people to write letters and to make visits. And you know, God is blessed. Just last Sunday, Pastor and Steve and I were out, and we followed up one of these grow visits, had the opportunity for about 30 minutes to share the gospel, and a young lady, I think in her 20s, bowed her head and prayed to receive Christ right on her driveway. It works when we give the gospel out. But we could use some more help with that. Both teams need more people. Either Monday, was the second Monday of each month, and the fourth Saturday of each month we meet for that. Grow Team 1 and 2. We put out tracts, and I just did this in the announcement time just a little bit ago to say, hey, take a tract, take a couple, and try to give them away each week. We got to live disciplined lives thinking that's my job, that's my responsibility. I can't expect someone else to do my evangelism for me. God calls me to do that. We have special programs from time to time at Easter and at Christmas. Right now, we just began work on our Easter program, and we're going to have Easter flyers out pretty soon. You can take those and invite people. That's another way. That's another door through which you can evangelize and get friends and family to come to these things. Occasionally, we take a Sunday evening off, usually the fifth Sunday of the month. That's an opportunity for you to invite a co-worker or a neighbor to have supper with you, or maybe to take them out for coffee, or spend a little time in their garage getting to know them and build bridges. All we're doing as a ministry, at least as I am as a pastor, is providing you opportunities to do what we should be doing in a disciplined life and giving away our faith. You have been called to be a disciple. So have I. God expects us to make a difference, and we can. And how are we going to do that? Disciplined life of following Christ, as I've tried to outline for you today. Let me finish and talk to you today about one of the most moving places in all of Washington, D.C. to visit. I don't know if you've had that opportunity or not to be there. I'm talking about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It's amazing what these men who guard the tomb 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year. There was a hurricane several years ago, I think it was Isabel or something like that, was coming through, and they were offered to take that day off while the hurricane passed through D.C. The men refused to do it, and they went out and marched through hurricane winds to guard the tomb of the unknown soldier. Incredible men, an incredible calling. You have to be between 5'10 and 6'2 and have maintain a 30-inch waist. you have to do this, you have to agree to this assignment for 2 years to do it. You live in a barracks underneath the tomb, and for the first 6 months, you're not allowed to talk or watch television. Instead, they want you to study the 175 notable persons buried in Arlington National Cemetery so that you know who they are and where they are interred. If you don't think that's rigorous enough, most people would say, ain't nothing doing on that. I'm not doing that. They spend about 5 hours a day getting their uniforms ready so they can be out on their march for 30 minutes. Their assignment's 30 minutes. But it takes them the rest of the day to get ready for the 30-minute assignment, changing the guard every 30 minutes. Well, that protocol may seem unusually rigorous and disciplined, but each member of the tomb guards it as the highest honor that can be afforded a service person. This thought, and I'm through. You and I stand watch over an empty tomb. Shouldn't we be more committed than they? Shall we pray?